Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is the Game Football Podcast from The Times. Today, Argentina hit their stride as they reach the knockout stages. Poland come with them after an abysmal performance. There's heartbreak for Mexico after their victory over Saudi Arabia. We'll talk about Tunisia's important win over France and Denmark's poor campaign as they exit bottom of the group. We'll get Matt Dickinson's thoughts on England and look ahead to Thursday's matches. This is The Game. Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast. I'm Hugh Wisencroft alongside Tom Allnutt and Gregor Robertson this evening. I've just got back from the Argentina match. We'll discuss that group a little bit later on, but let's start with, I guess, Wabi Kazri and Tunisia. He is going down in football folklore after today. The winning goal as the Tunisians beat France. It wasn't enough for them to reach the knockout stages for the first time, but it did provide a special moment, an emotional moment at this World Cup. Gregor, what did you make of it?
Yeah, it was a remarkable moment and very unfortunate that Australia scored 2 minutes later, I think, and the dream died quite quickly. But as James Gearbrand pointed out in his match report, the team contained six French-born players. It was clearly a massive, massive moment for all the Tunisian fans in the stadium and the players, and for Kazri, once of Sunderland, of course. So yeah, it was a huge moment, but as I say, unfortunate that it was short-lived, and ultimately it didn't count for the thing that really mattered for them in the end, and that's qualification.
Exactly. But I did want to start with them because, you know, there are so many people that feel, you know, it shouldn't matter. You know, things that are in the past are in the past, but they matter. They matter to people, and it has been a politically charged World Cup. And I think Tunisia would have seen this fixture from the start and thought, it doesn't really matter what happens in the World Cup. Beating France, playing against France, is our cup final. And they got the result they wanted. They got a goal in this competition. It was a reward for all of their efforts. And I know they're not here to make up the numbers. But I think if you said to them before, you are going to go out, but you get to beat France, I think a lot of Tunisian fans would have taken it, at least speaking to the ones here. You know, it meant so, so much to them, Tom. And I just think, you know, I wanted to start with, probably for me personally, so I'm hogging this podcast, but I think the special moment of the day, if you like.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, what an amazing result for them. I mean, obviously disappointing in the group not to get through, particularly, I think, you know, if you'd said at the start they would finish on, 4 points in the end, you know, and they beat France and they still wouldn't qualify for the last 16. I think, you know, they would be pretty disappointed with that. But as Gregor says, it's a shame it didn't last longer. I mean, you know, I think they scored and literally within 3 or 4 minutes, I was watching the Australia-Denmark game and it felt like Australia, you know, the whole stadium there kind of found out that Tunisia had scored, and there was a sort of surge of support from the stands. And within a few minutes, Australia had kind of capitalised on that and took the lead. So it was short-lived, but as you say, an incredible result and something that they can at least hold on to in the disappointment of going out.
Before we move on to that Australian performance, there was just one thing that I wanted to clarify, because there were some sketchy things, should we say that, some debatable things at the World Cup today. Antoine Griezmann's goal, or non-goal, should I say, was it offside? Could you get that, Gregor?
So look, I really don't want to like make some mistake that I don't realise, I don't understand the law properly, but like when the phases of play start and end as well? Like when the ball came in and it was headed. I don't know. I'm confused by it all. There's quite a lot of laws in the game of football now that I'm a little bit confused about. And that should probably embarrass me as someone who's A, played the game, and B, is now it's my job to write about it and speak about it. But it has become quite confusing. And that, for me, did did seem quite confusing at the time. And, you know, there have been other instances that I'm sure we'll come to later in the podcast.
Head-scratching moments.
Oh, my goodness, yes. My goodness.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm going to get to that. But on Griezmann, I, you know, again, it doesn't mean a lot. France go through. But I do think, you know, and we never expected perfect refereeing, but it may have been the South Korean game with Senegal. But one of the goals that was scored, hit an arm, as the ball got delivered into the box, not saying the player knew anything about it, but I thought the reason that goal was allowed to stand is because in between the ball putting, being hit on the arm and being put in the back of the net by a teammate, in between that, a South Korean player flicked out to try and clear the ball, got a toe end to it, couldn't really clear it properly, and then it was put in the back of the net. And I thought that was the new phase of play. And because the handball didn't lead directly to a goal, that was meant to be why it stood. It may be, the other hand, it was just non-deliberate, but it, you know, for me, I thought that was why it didn't stand. But today, I couldn't understand why Antoine Griezmann was offside. But there you go. It gave me the special moment that I eulogised about at the start, so I'm not complaining too much. I will complain about some other refereeing decisions a little bit later on. Let's round off this group, though. I think, look, a great result for Tunisia. I think their manager called it a bitter victory, and it was one of those. It meant a lot historically in the context between the two countries. And they got the 3 points that they wanted, and it will live long in the memory, but I think they would have loved to go through as well. They almost got the job done beating France. Australia, though, finished second in Group D. They beat Denmark by a goal to nil. The Socceroos reaching the knockout stages for the first time in 16 years. Matthew Leckie scored the goal. And it, yeah, I mean, I heard that there were thousands of fans, 2:30 in the morning, watching the end of that game in Melbourne. It means a lot for Australian football, of course. They reached the knockout stages for the first time in 16 years, as I mentioned. And look, back-to-back wins. It wasn't scraping through on goal difference. They got 6 points. They got the same as France. That is amazing for the Australian fans, isn't it, Tom? How did they get the job done?
Well, they got the job done kind of how they've been doing it all tournament, which is sort of grinding their way through, out-muscling, out-fighting the opposition. I mean, I have to say, I sort of find Australia a real kind of guilty pleasure in this World Cup. Every time I kind of watch them play, I really sort of find them something very satisfying about kind of watching a team sort of muddle through just on the real sort of fundamentals of football. I feel like, you know, we're always so bound up at the moment in kind of Mbappe and Messi and Ronaldo and obviously all the kind of the big players and the big storylines. To see a side like Australia sort of go back to the kind of old-fashioned cliches, I guess, of sort of team spirit and grit and determination, big man up front, a couple of sort of big brutes in central defence, you know, hard tackling, big headers, you know, this kind of thing. I really enjoy watching it. And I think, you know, today they deserve their victory again. I mean, they got the goal that they needed and they found a way. I mean, I love this thing with Graham Arnold, you know, at the end of matches in a big huddle with Martin Boyle, who was injured and couldn't play the tournament, sort of on crutches next to him every time. And every time they win, he sort of tells them no celebrations, no emotions. You know, we go to the next game and win the next one kind of thing. I think this mentality of the Australia team has been a real pleasure to watch in the group stage. And, you know, I think we can all probably say that Argentina in the round of in the last 16 might be a step too far for them. But equally, I think it's been a great ride for them so far. And I guess Denmark, you know, on the opposite side of the coin, have been incredibly disappointing. I mean, they go out with a point from the group, which came from a 0-0 draw against Tunisia. And to be honest, they offered very little today at all.
I have to say, listeners, it's not deliberate that Alison Rudd missed the podcast straight after England got through to the knockout stages, having been predicted to exit early by Alison. And now her favourite team, her favourite player, Christian Eriksen, gone early. I mean, Gregor, was it a case, you know, I want to call it the Alison Rudd curse. Maybe it wasn't the Alison Rudd curse, although I think we should bring that into the podcast for the future. Was it a case
I
of them just...
I wrote a text message to you, I'll be honest, saying commiserations, Alison, but I didn't hit the send button. I wasn't sure how it would go down in the end, you know. The first thing I have to say is I wholeheartedly agree with everything Tom said, although there should be no guilt taken in gaining pleasure from watching this Australia team, because they're great. It's kind of all these visceral qualities that are like just bodies on the line. Harry Souter, what an absolute man mountain he is. Again, he played, I think, one 90-minute game before the World Cup after like almost a year out with an ACL injury. He spent time on loan at Fleetwood Town. Aaron Moy, he's never been the most mobile player, but he takes up really smart positions, both in and out of possession. He's, you know, great at kind of so many times against France, actually, even though they lost that game, he was the man on front of the back four. He was cutting out the cutbacks, if you know what I mean. He takes up some really clever positions, and I think he's been brilliant as well and covered a lot of ground. And Lecky took his goal brilliantly, the way he cut inside, chopped back again, made Joachim Mela kind of briefly turn his back, like momentarily disorientates a defender, and then shot through his legs. And what a moment. So they've had the opportunity to play France and Mbappe, and now they get the chance to meet Argentina and Messi.
No, I agree with you. I think they've been fantastic. Just bringing that energy and that spirit that was needed. I think we've seen a lot of that in this tournament. Two clean sheets, 2-1-0 wins. I mean, you know, if they can keep it tight at the back and Suter has been fantastic, then who knows? Who knows what could be up next? We'll look ahead, I think, a little bit to their game in the knockout stages. We need to talk about Denmark. I mentioned Alisson Rudd, who, yeah, couldn't be here for personal reasons. Let's call it that. Did their disdain for the World Cup cost them? Because they didn't want to be here. They didn't agree with it. They wanted to wear protest t-shirts. We know they had the toned down kits. Everyone back home in Denmark was against it. They brought the fewest number of Danish fans to any tournament they've ever been to. Were they just not in love with the World Cup? Are they almost happy that they're going home? What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. I mean, I can't help but think that the players, you know, when they go out on the pitch and they're playing these matches, that, you know, they're switching on to the World Cup. These are players who look forward to these tournaments from, you know, their whole careers. These are the highlights of their career. I understand the kind of political backdrop and the reservations that many of them might understandably have. And obviously Denmark have been among the more vocal teams in that regard. But still, I don't think that's a valid explanation for the way they've played here. It feels like they didn't really have any punch in the games. They didn't really create enough chances. And with the chance they did create, it never really, like, they were going to score them. And Eriksson, I think, was sort of fairly kind of quiet in the games, really. They didn't really put any kind of stamp on any of the matches that they played. And it just kind of felt they were drifting through this tournament. In the end, they drifted out. I mean, the manager kind of summed it up. You know, he sort of said the football, it sucked. And that was it, I think, for Denmark. You know, they kind of came here. They didn't really make much of an impression and they're going home early.
Gregor, what was your view on Denmark?
I agree. They scored one goal. They had three shots on target in a game that they had to win, really, in an attacking sense. They flickered for a part of the second half against France. You know, after they scored, Christensen equalised. They had a couple of chances to take the lead. That was their best phase in the tournament, but otherwise it's been absolutely kind of one to forget. They've just not had the same energy, the same threat, the same, it might be too much to say, the same kind of togetherness and unity, because it was a unique circumstance in the Euros, but they don't look quite as kind of, I don't know, motivated. And that, I don't think that's true either. I just think that they've just looked a shadow of themselves at the Euros. And as I say, that was a unique circumstance. So it's going to be a huge disappointment for them, given the sort of expectation that they came into the tournament with. And they stated it. It was a stated aim that they felt they could possibly go all the way and win it with a fair wind. And they've fallen well short.
Yeah, I think Kasper Hjulmand said that they were overly emotional, and that played a part. But there you go. Denmark are going home. Yeah, let's talk about the game that I went to this evening. Argentina. Well, it was, do you know what? Both games, I think we need to talk about, because they so intertwine. Messi was fantastic, really conducted things for Argentina. They finally got their rhythm, I think. And yeah, I mean, it was just a complete difference to what we've seen, even from the second game, obviously from the first game. Argentina were beaten by Saudi Arabia. Then they beat Mexico. Tonight they beat Poland. And it was a one-horse race this game. I mean, there was only one team in it. Poland were absolutely atrocious, but Poland actually went through to the knockout stages on goal difference. They finished level on points with Mexico, and yeah, for a minute there they were going through on yellow cards, but Saudi Arabia scored deep in stoppage time. They were beaten in the end, Saudi Arabia 2-1 by Mexico. It wasn't enough for Mexico to reach the knockout stages for the ninth World Cup in a row. They are out in the group stage. And the goal difference was decisive, and it actually came down to a penalty save from Wojciech Szczesny from Lionel Messi. I mean, but we have to say justice was served. I might start there. Gregor, talk me through this, please. What on earth is going on?
Oh, it's astonishing, isn't it? It was just astonishing. I mean, I don't know what to say, Hugh. I honestly don't know what to say anymore. Like, you couldn't believe that in the first instance that he was sent to the monitor. And then, as we've said so many times, you know that the kind of pressure's on, the eyes of the world are on the referee. But even then, I don't have, you know, I'm still kind of angered by the fact that he felt that he had to give a penalty kick for what was really, it was just nothing. It was like, also, it's, no one seems to take any sort of notice of where the ball is now. Messi headed, he couldn't reach the header. The ball was going over and wide. Like, it's almost irrelevant if what Szczesny did after that, unless he kind of absolutely clattered him and, you know, it was a real act of violence, basically, which it very much was not. So it was innocuous in the first place, but it's kind of doubly hard to swallow, given that it would have had no bearing on what happened to the ball and what Messi had done with his header. So it was just ridiculous from start to finish. And unfortunately, there's been a few of these decisions so far in this World Cup.
I thought it was one of the worst VAR decisions that I've ever seen. There would be a penalty every time the ball went into the box. It wasn't, this is the worst thing, it wasn't even late contact. Super slow-mo, yeah, it looks late. Real time, he's fully entitled to go for the ball. He doesn't punch Messi.
It was a bad decision. We have to say, it was a bad decision from him to go for it in the first place. He'd made a good save, I think, and then,
yeah, from Alvarez, yeah.
Yes, and then a moment later, he's kind of, you know, he's got a rush of energy, and he's gone for a ball he shouldn't have gone for. But if he hadn't gone for it, Messi still would have headed the ball over and wide. He couldn't reach the header. So, like, I understand what you're saying, and it was very close. He came close to it, he missed by a fraction, but it had no bearing on what happened in the phase of play. And that's what really makes it so mind-boggling to me.
I can't accuse anyone of anything, obviously, but it did have a lot of football fans pondering how much FIFA want Messi to get to the knockout stages, don't you think, Tom?
I guess so, but even Messi, in the end, with the penalty, I mean, the actual record with penalties is actually not that good, but... No, I mean, I agree. I mean, it was an incredible decision. I mean, you look at these decisions and you kind of think, in isolation, maybe you could get one of those kind of things wrong. But the idea that it was recommended for a review in the first place is a complete nonsense. And then you just kind of assume, okay, the referee's going to go and look at it and then make the conclusion that we're all making here watching it, that it clearly isn't a penalty. And yet, somehow, he also comes to the decision that it is a penalty. I mean, it's a complete farce, really, that decision. But in the end, justice was done, I guess. And that was the only blessing, really, from it.
Well, Szczesny was basically man of the match, to be honest, because Poland would have been out if it wasn't for him. And it wasn't just the penalty save. Yeah, we'll talk about Argentina's rhythm in a second, because I think they really got going. Poland, I went to this game, obviously, messaging my partner, who's Polish, throughout, you know, clearly there was tension both at home and in the stadium where I was, with those mainly Argentina fans, 95% full, making as much noise as possible. The phone was going constantly. My partner doesn't know the rules, but she was angry too. And she wanted Poland to go through, obviously, and so did I, ultimately. But by the end of the game, I was kind of disappointed that they went through. I mean, that is how bad they were. Their coach made two substitutions at halftime. His players hadn't put any pressure on the ball in the first half, and I thought, brilliant, going to change the shape, maybe he'll go five at the back, wing backs, don't know, flood the midfield, three in the middle, he's going to do something. They lined up exactly the same way at the start of the second half, and Argentina scored within about 30-35 seconds. Like, it was just utterly ridiculous, and they were so bad throughout the game. I mean, at one point, we were talking about them trying to avoid being booked to go through, and you actually felt that message had gone onto the pitch. They were atrocious. They were absolutely atrocious, and you kind of felt bad for Mexico, who beat Saudi Arabia and actually went for it in that game, that they didn't go through because they had two goals disallowed for offside, and they put all the pressure on. And I mean, it was, oh, they stunk the place out, Poland. I'm still reeling for that. I mean, they were just incredibly poor, Gregor.
I felt bad for Lewandowski as well. I mean, there's, for most of that game, he didn't have a teammate within 40 yards of him. He was so isolated, like just chasing shadows. At one point, he was chasing Messi in the second half and trying to kind of square him up, and then he fouled him, and then he fouled him again, and Messi stopped. He was like, hang on a minute. Like, that's what this guy's reduced to playing for this Poland side. I think they had 27% of the ball, didn't have a shot on target. Like, you're right, they were completely abject. And I know, it was going through my mind, you know, obviously, as it the drama kind of unfurled because of what was going on across the city, I was kind of wondering how quickly they knew about the kind of the prospect that they have them going through because of fewer yellow cards. Like, how quickly did that message get onto the pitch? Did that really influence them in any way? I really would love to know about that. I think BBC coverage showed that someone from the coaching staff, you know, belatedly ran round and told Chesney, like, we need to, you know, don't let in another goal. Like, was telling him something. But I also wonder about that, about the card thing as well, because it was just nuts, and they had no ambition whatsoever because they were teetering on the brink. I mean, as we come to, Mexico were throwing the kitchen sink at Saudi Arabia and had two goals chalked off for offside. They were, you know, on the edge, and they did nothing about it. They just held on for dear life. Look, on the other hand, we do have to give Argentina credit, because this is by far the best they've been. I thought they were really compact. They moved the ball quickly, and Messi was like the Messi of old without a couple of yards of his old pace. But that's the best Messi we're going to get, I think. And it was a joy to watch. Just getting dropping deep, turning, spinning players, committing people, running at them, little one-twos. That one where he picked the ball up around the halfway line, turned and ran, you know, we've seen it so many times, and then we've seen the ball kind of, we've seen the net ripple, and he scuffed it with his right foot and then slashed it with his left. That was really disappointing, but everything up to that moment was like the Messi of old, so I very much hope we're going to see more of that in the rest of the tournament, and then that Argentina can kind of improve from here as well.
Alexis McAllister got the first, a Premier League goalscorer from Brighton, of course. Julian Alvarez of Manchester City got the second. Tom, 37 passes led up to that Alvarez goal. And, I mean, I was watching the build-up play, and a couple of times, we're talking players 15, 20 yards off the ball. I mean, it was so incredibly passive. I want to give Argentina credit, but they will do that if you allow them to. I actually felt we were watching them play just the perfect warm-up match. They suddenly were like, okay, we know what we're doing now. We've hit a groove with our possession. We can pass teams to death. We'll create an opportunity. We'll score a brilliant goal. And we can carry that into the knockout stages. I mean, brilliant finish from Alvarez. Again, I'm just still disappointed about Poland's application.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting, actually, that after the match, the Poland manager said that he had told the players before the game that they should avoid unnecessary yellow cards. And I think he specified that he was basically kind of saying things like descent to the referee and shirt pulling. But you do kind of wonder if that was kind of in their minds, because you just sort of the way they were playing was, as you say, Hugh, so passive and so standoffish. It really felt like maybe they were all trying to avoid, you know, even a tackle, let alone a yellow card. I mean, apart from anything else, it was actually quite sort of a cowardly approach, because it was incredibly high risk. I mean, Mexico could easily have scored. They were really pushing for another goal. Argentina could easily have scored another one. I mean, I just think they really got away with it, Poland. It didn't seem like their strategy was right at all. And as you said, the performance was really poor. And I think we can all, I don't know, it would be an incredible upset, an incredible turnaround if Poland did anything against France in the last 16. So I think England and Senegal can pretty much assume that it is going to be France in the quarterfinals. Famous last words, but I think that looks like a pretty good draw now for France. But pulling back to Argentina, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think it was a good finish by Alvarez, no doubt about that. And I thought it was a nice little ball through from Enzo Fernandez as well. And I think those two coming into the team and doing well sort of sum up the kind of turnaround really for Argentina since that first game. They just got better and better with every match. And I think they go into the knockouts now with real momentum, you know, Messi playing well, the team on an upward trajectory. And I just was really impressed by their kind of intensity and their aggression. I mean, in general, this World Cup, it's been a great thing to see. I think we've seen so many of those kind of thundering throwback slide tackles, you know, which for a while felt like were a kind of a distant memory in the game. But actually they've been allowed by the referees in this tournament, and so much the better, because it's been fantastic to see. And in this game, you know, there were two or three of them from Otamendi, I think. De Paul did one. They look like they've kind of got an intensity and aggression they didn't have a couple of weeks ago. And maybe that's a product of the sort of the players, I wouldn't say, you know, getting to know each other. But I mean, sort of finding a kind of rhythm together now as the tournament goes on with such a sort of short preparation window. We might see that with some of these really stronger sides. They actually get better as the tournament goes on. And I think Argentina go into the knockouts looking pretty good, actually.
Yeah, that was going to be my next point, Gregor. They've suddenly turned into a side that we'll be fancying again.
I thought the first half was still fairly kind of edgy. You know, they did create some chances, but it was the second half where they really upped to tempo. And it's all about upping the tempo. When I said I thought they were really compact. It was even in possession. There was like a real bank of players in the middle of the park who were all kind of moving and interchanging, and they could move out wide, and Alvarez finish, which was excellent. Matty Cash was the one who was coming inside kind of slightly belatedly to try and challenge him, and that was because there was an overload on his outside shoulder. So like, it is about, they were committing lots of players forward, but there was always kind of, I felt when watching this game, there was a bank of players in the middle who were kind of be able to move the ball quickly and do the, you know, threaten through the middle as well. But just the sheer, yeah, having someone out wide too is kind of, will pull out, expose the defenders and make the gaps for players to run through into. And that's how that goal ultimately came, that's where it came from. So, yeah, a bit moving the ball quicker. And, you know, as Tom said, a bit of kind of devilment as well. They just looked really up for it. And I think we're getting closer to seeing the Argentina that everyone hoped we would see.
Any issues for the favoured sides in the last 16? France against Poland, Argentina against Australia. What do you think, Tom?
I think it's an interesting sort of shape to the draw, actually. I mean, in the round of 16, it looks like the kind of favourites, as you put it, have a fairly kind draw now. You know, I think Argentina, Australia looks all right for them. France, Poland, they'll be pretty happy with that. England, Senegal is obviously tighter. But Netherlands, USA as well. I feel like in that round of 16, all of those kind of favourites would be fairly happy with that draw. But where it will get complicated for those is in the quarterfinals. You know, England, France, for example, would be a really tough quarterfinal for both of those, and Netherlands, Argentina as well. Whereas I think almost conversely, in the other side of the draw, let's see what happens in the next couple of days. But it looks like there could be some quite tricky matchups for the favourites in the last 16. But if they get through, then the quarters could be a little bit more straightforward. But yeah, I don't see any real problems for either Argentina or France with Australia and Poland, that's for sure.
No point asking you, Gregor. Going to be an easy walk in the park for both, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, Australia, I've got big John Souter, who's absolutely turned into my idol. Cranky, we're talking about some challenges there, Tom. There's still, I don't think we'll ever top his tackle against Tunisia towards the end, where he just raced across the penalty box and absolutely thundered through. I can't remember who the player was, unfortunately, but that was like, oh my God, what a joy to watch that was. And it was like perfectly timed in the box, quite risky, but he pulled it off. And there was a couple of them in this game as well. So yeah, getting, you know, they certainly don't want to be lumping the ball in the box. But fortunately, I don't think Argentina will be doing that.
I do like the way that you referred to a Scotland international there. I love it. John Souter.
Did I say John Souter?
It doesn't matter. We know you love Scotland. Harry's his brother, and Harry is playing fantastically for Australia. But hell, look, if you want to get a Scotland player to the World Cup, however you can, however you want to, then go ahead, Gregor.
Well, we've missed out there, haven't we?
Nightmare. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Listen, before we will very quickly look ahead to the games coming up on Thursday, I think it is. I've got no idea what day of the week it is. The game's coming up on Thursday. We're going to predict what we think might happen in a few moments' time. Before we get there, a little bit earlier on, I caught up with Matt Dickinson to reflect on the England game, the victory over Wales, and what he thinks might be in the future for England. I started, of course, by talking to him about that victory, a 3-0 win, a couple of goals for Marcus Rashford and one for Phil Foden over Wales. His reaction to it was this.
I wouldn't say all positive. I'd say sort of measured positivity. I think given that we came in, you know, as we know, such little preparation, we've had a year or 18 months of uncertain form collectively and individually. So I think, considering that, to have come into this group stage, to have scored 9 goals, 7 points, unbeaten, defensively pretty secure, Maguire, you know, got a lot of confidence back, a team that's got some confidence back and some stability back. I think that's the most important thing, just that, because, you know, I don't think any of us could be sure how England were going to land at this tournament. Obviously, Gareth Southgate knows his players really well. He's worked with them a long time, but, you know, it had been a bumpy time. So I think it's, say, measured positivity that we're back to some kind of direction, some kind of momentum. But equally, as we'll discuss, he's got some big decisions to make about selection, formation, as we go into the knockout games.
Yeah, I mean, we debated it last night. Bukayo Saka is probably sitting on that bench thinking, this isn't great for me. He hasn't played badly in this tournament, but Phil Foden had the kind of expected impact on the game, scored a goal, of course. Marcus Rashford now, in terms of his form in this tournament, is probably number one in terms of the wide players. So he's got some very difficult choices to make going forward. We also saw a different use for Jude Bellingham in this game. No one had really seen him as sort of the number 10, a creative playmaker, if you like, in this team. He was sort of seen as someone who would sit beside Declan Rice. Before we talk about what might happen at the back, how do you see that midfield and front three configuring as we go into the game against Senegal?
You know, given that Senegal themselves, you know, play a not dissimilar system, you know, back four and so on, I'd be surprised. I mean, I think he could easily switch to a back three at some stage, you know, particularly if you were playing France with Mbappe, then I think it's a no-brainer. But this game, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he sticks with the four. I think, you know, knowing that, you know, Senegal are, you know, very athletic, as you have seen, you know, and discussed, they're very intense right from the off. I wouldn't be surprised if he sticks with a similar midfield to yesterday. You know, Jordan Henderson came in. He's not everyone's sort of, you know, flavour of the month as a WoW player, but I think he brings a certain stability to that. And that stability allowed Bellingham to really use his athleticism to really roam, to press high, to be around the box. You know, I think, you know, he is just such a talent, and that is a role that can bring out his full versatility. So Mount is obviously someone who's done a lot under Gareth Southgate, but I wouldn't be surprised if he sticks with a similar configuration. And up front, yeah, I mean, the wide players, that lovely spoil for choice feel. You know, Rashford, you know, it was a sort of cathartic appearance for him. You know, he's really got his tail up, looking full of confidence now. Foden, obviously, you know, that's probably his, you know, most pleasurable half in an England shirt. Saka, you know, I mean, it's interesting. Everyone was sort of screaming for Foden coming into that Wales game, but, you know, no one was mentioning it after Iran, when obviously Saka scored a couple of lovely goals. And, you know, we haven't even mentioned Sterling yet, who's never let Gareth Southgate down. And there is Jack Grealish, who once was the saviour. Ultimately, Gareth Southgate will be studying Senegal, how they defend. He'll be studying the profile of their fullbacks, working out where we need pace, where we need players who cut in, where we need ball carriers. You know, are we going to get space to run in behind? Those are the sort of key decisions that will make him decide which profile of player. But I think ultimately you could pick any of those five and be reasonably confident that they're coming in, you know, decent form and confidence.
Matt, finally, when you look around this tournament, how well set are England? Because I always have concerns. I'm the negative Nelly of this podcast, as you know. But I now look at an England team who is getting into a rhythm in a 4-3-3. And my major concern is, at some point, we all expect it will become a probably a 3-4-3. And England will have to turn it on, go and win a game in a new formation against one of the better sides in the tournament, maybe a quarterfinal against France, who've looked superb. You know, is the next game against Senegal actually a chance to move early to that safety first system, which may make the game against Senegal a little bit more difficult because obviously we're now going to be changing system going into it. But actually, is it one where you think we need to do it sooner rather than later? The quality of Wales wasn't really there. The United States maybe should have punished England, and maybe that showed a lack of attacking quality in their game. And Iran clearly were a level beneath England. At this point in time, you go out to the knockout stages. Do you expect Southgate could do that?
I think he could, but I wouldn't. I don't think it's, you know, necessary to do it to prepare for a next game. I don't think you can look beyond it. I mean, you know, England, as Southgate said last night after the Wales game, said, you know, England will be favourites, you know, on ranking, on, you know, going player for player. I think for that reason as well, it's likely that he'll more or less match up with Senegal. And, you know, I think there is, for the first time, a bit of a gap if England get through before a quarterfinal to change formations, to change the team. But I really don't think we should get ahead of ourselves. You know, I mean, the fact is that, you know, we're into knockout football now. We're not playing, you know, mugs. We know a lot of these players for Senegal. They play for big clubs. Several, obviously, we know from the Premier League. And, you know, Gareth Southgate is, you know, one game every match now from, you know, potentially even people saying it's, you know, thanks Gareth. So that is the realm that we're in now. It's knockout football. And, you know, I think England can move forward, you know, gathering confidence, gathering momentum. But we've also seen some scratchy halves. So, you know, I'm more confident than I was a week ago. But let's not get carried away.
Okay, Matt, I can assure you I won't. All right. Thank you very much.
You never. That's, well, you're the voice. You're the voice of pragmatism here, I know.
So. I try my best to keep you all, you know, keep your feet on the ground. I try my best, like I say. Matt Dickinson, thank you very much for joining us on the game. We will have all the build up. Matt, Henry Winter, Matt Lawton and co from out here in Qatar to that game, England against Senegal. You can read more of it on the Times app right now. Our thanks to Matt Dickinson. Yeah, England against Senegal I think might be comfortable, but we will of course look ahead to that as we reach the weekend. Before we get there, some games for us to try and predict. A couple of big ones as well. In Group F, Croatia against Belgium. That could see the Belgians go out. Canada face Morocco, who could still go through. In Group E, Japan take on Spain. All to play for Japan. And Germany take on Costa Rica, needing to win. A couple of the teams that I think we should focus on here. Belgium and Germany. So Belgium taking on Croatia. Very disappointing so far. Tom, what do you think they can produce against the Croatians, who of course had that big win against Canada last time out?
To be honest, I don't really see Belgium turning this around. I mean, I just haven't really been very impressed with them at all in this tournament. And it feels like this has maybe been one World Cup too far for this sort of generation, if you like. Maybe they can sort of pull it off in the last game, but I would expect maybe Croatia can grind their way through that one. Modric, I think, is a yellow card away from suspension possibly for the last 16. So they'll probably be keeping an eye on that. But yeah, I think Belgium are having a really disappointing tournament, and I'd be surprised if they could suddenly transform themselves for this match.
Gregor, what do you think?
There's obviously quite a bit of turmoil in the Belgium camp as well. There's been all sorts of stories emerging about, I don't know, clashes, about players, well, also players speaking quite publicly, De Bruyne and Hazard among them, about their best days are in the past. Or even some pointed words about how slow their defenders are. They're not, you know, they're getting on in years. And then Roberto Martinez has come out today, I think, saying that he thinks that, you know, a French newspaper are trying to stir things up, and that the Belgian media have bought it. So there's clearly, I think there's a kind of clear the air barbecue as well that they had either today or yesterday. So that's not a happy camp. And even without all of that, you know, I think we've seen that in their performances. It looks like something's not right. And Croatia had their best display of the tournament in the last game. So I would bet on Croatia in that game. You know, just after seeing France and Tunisia today, I feel like Japan might spring a surprise, though. That's the only one, and that would be a surprise. But I just have a nagging feeling that that's a possibility if Spain rest players as we would expect them to. You never know.
Tom?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like all the big teams have sort of had one impressive result and one slightly, you know, unnerving result. And maybe Spain, having had that thumping 7-0 win, they were slightly less convincing, I thought, against Germany, who sort of exposed some of the weaknesses that the Spain team have. We know they're fantastic on the ball. They can sort of dominate any match. And under Luis Enrique as well, I think they've added some physicality and speed and a bit more punch to what they had before. But there's still no doubt they've got some weaknesses at the back, you know, especially in central defence. They're playing Rodri there, and there's a bit of a lack of speed, I think, and teams can get in behind them, I think, if they sort of play more directly and at speed and in the transition. I think Spain can look vulnerable. So it'll be an interesting one to see, no doubt about that. I mean, Luis Enrique was sort of asked, I think, whether they might even sort of target drawing, you know, so they end up finishing second in the group and then avoid Brazil. And it was interesting that he actually said, you know, we have talked about that in the coaching staff. We have reflected on that, I think is what he said, you know, which even surprised me they even considered it. But he admitted that it was too much of a high-risk strategy because they can still... they could still not qualify Spain, even though that seems unlikely. So I think they've been one of the most impressive teams overall so far, but not without some flaws. So I agree with Gregor. It could be an interesting game to watch, you know, particularly if they rest some players. Spain have got a lot of potential rotations they could make in this match. And if they do that, then it could be a game where they could be a bit of a surprise.
Okay, something for us to reflect on tomorrow. Some big games coming up at the World Cup. You can read all about them, of course, on the Times app, or you can check out the game. It's thetimes.co.uk/the game. Tom Olnett, Gregor Robertson, thank you. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.